welcome to Condensed Matter, condensing recent work in metaphysics and the philosophy of science down to what matters. I'm your host, Sam Kimpton Nye. This episode is about David Chalmers' paper, The Singularity, a Philosophical Analysis, published in the Journal of Consciousness Studies in 2010. So recently there has been frenzied interest in artificial intelligence, AI, and in particular in the issue of AI safety. There have been open letters signed by some of the biggest names in the tech business urging us to take seriously the existential threat posed by AI. And the UK government has just announced that it will convene the first global AI safety summit this autumn. But what is the threat here exactly? There are risks associated with any new technology. Fire burns, nuclear energy can be harnessed in bombs, and social media algorithms threaten democracy. The so-called AI singularity is supposed to be at least on par with the absolute worst of these threats since, according to some, it has the real potential to wipe out all of humanity. The basic idea behind the worry that chatbots might precipitate a threat on the scale of that to which the Manhattan Project gave rise is that there will come a point when an AI is more intelligent than any human and capable of creating AI more intelligent than itself, which in turn creates AI that is more intelligent still, and so on, giving rise to an intelligence explosion. And since we will stand in relation to the upper echelons of this intelligence hierarchy as ants stand to us, there is little reason to think that the superintelligent AI will have any interest in preserving our values or our lives, hence the worry about human extinction. So this is the singularity worry in a nutshell, but it leaves various questions open. Notably, one, will there really be a singularity? Two, how should we negotiate a singularity, and will it necessarily be a bad thing, resulting in human extinction? And three, assuming the singularity doesn't wipe out humanity, how can we integrate into a post-singularity world? These three questions are taken up by David Chalmers in this paper. Now, this paper was originally published in 2010, so I suppose it's interesting to think about how it's aged given recent developments. First, we need to get a bit more precise about what we mean by AI, though it does seem that we can't really get too precise, and actually I think therein lies an important difficulty. Nevertheless, for the sake of his discussion, Chalmers lets AI be understood as artificial intelligence that is of human level or greater, i.e. is at least as intelligent as the average human. Chalmers then defines AI plus as artificial intelligence of greater than human level, and AI++ is AI that's far, far more intelligent than humans, at least as far beyond the most intelligent human as the most intelligent human is beyond a mouse. The argument then is that there will be AI soon, so perhaps it already exists in 2023, certainly some people are saying that. Now if there is AI, then there will be AI+. This is to be expected given the way that computer technology always advances. And by the same reasoning, we should expect there to be AI++ and so on. Now if we add in that once we get to the level of AI+, it will be the AIs themselves creating the next generation of AI, we might expect the whole process to be really quite rapid, given that the process is no longer constrained by our human limitations in designing and building these intelligent machines. So we set the chain in motion by developing AI, and perhaps AI+, but once we get to that point, it's off on its own. AI creating ever more intelligent AI, and so on to an intelligence explosion, or the singularity. Chalmers then sets about defending the premises of the argument. Premise one says that there will be AI before long. Why should we believe this premise? Well, it's reasonable to think of the human brain as a machine. It's made of physical stuff, organized in a certain way, exhibiting causal structure, and so on. And in general, machines, including biological machines, can be emulated. So it seems reasonable to think that we will soon have the capacity to emulate the human brain, and if we emulate the human brain, we will have AI. Is the brain, in some sense, more than a machine? Isn't it plausible that aspects of our mental lives are non-physical? Some might object that there is nothing machine-like or mechanical to the feeling of love or the satisfying mental workout associated with reading difficult philosophy. Yet these non-physical feelings play a significant role in affecting behaviour. One might then object that these non-physical mental phenomena cannot be emulated by a machine, and hence that human-level AI is impossible. Now, Chalmers himself is actually sympathetic to a form of dualism about consciousness, the idea that mental properties are not physical properties. But he does not think that this precludes the possibility of emulating consciousness or these mental properties in a machine. It's well established by neuroscience that consciousness correlates with mechanical brain activity, whether or not the conscious experiences are themselves physical. So why not expect conscious feelings to come along for the ride with a suitable mechanical brain emulation too? Another way to defend the premise that there will soon be AI is by appeal to evolution. Evolution produced human intelligence and did so without any antecedent intelligence or forethought of its own. If evolution can produce something in this unintelligent manner, then surely we, with our human intelligence, can actually produce it much faster. Now, this argument may be resisted by resisting evolution and instead embracing intelligent design, for example. Or one might think that evolution produced intelligence by means that we cannot replicate. Or perhaps evolution gave rise to intelligence by an enormous stroke of luck. Chalmers finds these objections implausible, but notes that the arguments so far do not tell us exactly how AI will be attained. Though so far, two salient possibilities are, number one, AI will arise by brain emulation, i.e. by simulating the brain neuron by neuron. And number two, AI will arise by artificial evolution. We may evolve a population of AIs in the lab. Other possibilities for how AI will be attained include, three, the creation of AI by directly writing a computer program from scratch, and four, the creation of AI by machine learning, which is where an initial system plus a learning algorithm and correct exposure to the right environment leads to AI. Okay, so much for the premise that there will be AI. Why should we believe that if there is AI, then there will be AI plus soon after? One reason to think this is that computational products advance so rapidly. Just as you've unboxed your new iPhone, the updated model is announced. The method of producing iPhones and computers in general is extendable, meaning we have the capacity to extend the method and rapidly improve the technology. Plausibly then, the same will be the case for AI. It will be produced by an extendable method, meaning that shortly after we have AI, AI plus will be on the horizon. Chalmers thinks that it's likely that the method by which AI is produced will be extendable, but he also canvasses a path to AI plus that does not rely on first producing AI, then extending the method. The path is brain enhancement. We might be able to enhance our own brains, perhaps genetically, pharmacologically, surgically, or even educationally. But once our brains are enhanced, we'd plausibly have the cognitive capacity to enhance those enhanced brains further still, leading to an intelligence explosion. We might then imagine any biological core to enhanced brains being ultimately dispensed with in order to continue the enhancement process. Hence, Chalmers thinks that brain enhancement is a likely first stage in an intelligence explosion. Finally, why believe the premise that says that once we have AI plus, we will soon have AI plus plus? One might question, for example, why an increase in intelligence from AI to AI plus should lead to a proportionate increase in capacity to design intelligent systems in order to then make the leap to AI plus plus. Perhaps, for example, there are upper limits on intelligence space, or maybe there are diminishing returns such that a 10% increase in intelligence is able to produce a next generation that is only 5% more intelligent, and so on, for example. These are what Chalmers calls structural obstacles to the singularity. Here's a very general objection to the possibility of the singularity. The arguments so far have assumed the reality of the property of intelligence. They have assumed that intelligence is a real thing that can be increased, compared, put to work, and so on. But it might be objected that there is no such thing as intelligence, or at least no single thing here. We might come to believe this by observing the fact that so-called intelligence operates along many independent dimensions. The machine AlphaGo is extremely proficient at the game Go, but no good at writing poetry. Not all great artists are also good at mathematics, and not all great musicians are great at team management. You get the point. People and machines are good at different things. So why believe that there is any one property, intelligence, here? This sort of worry motivates Chalmers to formulate the argument for the singularity without assuming the notion of intelligence. He introduces the notion of a self-amplifying cognitive capacity. Call it G. This capacity, G, is such that increases in it go along with proportionate increases in ability to create systems with the capacity G. Assume also that we can create systems whose capacity G is greater than our own. And finally, assume that there is another cognitive capacity, call it H, that we care about, and which is such that increases in H can always be produced by large enough increases in G. From this, it follows that G will explode, and H will explode with it. For concreteness, G might be programming ability, say, and H might be some specific reasoning ability that increases with programming ability. So as programming ability explodes, so does this reasoning ability. There is then a case to be made that reasoning ability will explode. The important point here is that the self-amplifying cognitive capacity correlates with something that we care about. We care about the singularity insofar as we care about some capacity exploding. In the original argument for the singularity, intelligence plays the role of both G and H. Intelligence is self-amplifying and something that we care about. But the point is that even if we deny the existence of intelligence, plausibly there may be some other self-amplifying cognitive capacity that correlates with something we care about, such as reasoning, and so we get an argument for an interesting or worrisome form of the singularity. Chalmers then discusses various other potential obstacles to the singularity, and the type he takes most seriously is what he calls motivational obstacles, the idea that humans or even AI plus will be disinclined to create yet more intelligent beings, perhaps because they will identify risks with doing so. But plausibly only one individual needs to create a superintelligent AI to get the explosion underway, and it is perhaps implausible that the motivational barriers will hold fast across the whole population. Okay, so assuming that the singularity is coming, what should we do about it? It's not certain that the singularity would be bad, so think of all the potential medical advances, for example. The challenge then is to figure out how to maximise the chance of a good post-singularity world. Chalmers suggests two forms of constraints that we might impose on AI in an attempt to secure the best outcomes for us. Internal constraints on the internal structure of AI, and external constraints concerning the relations between AI and ourselves. Let's think about internal constraints first. Maybe we could design AI to be limited in certain respects. So while it may be far better than us at certain tasks for which we'd want to use it, such as filing taxes, the AI might be built to lack autonomy or goals of its own. However, it might turn out to be the case that the best route to intelligence is through general intelligence. So it might just not be possible to build a super intelligent tax filing AI that also lacks autonomy. Perhaps these cognitive capacities always come along together. And anyway, even if it did work, this approach would be limited, it seems. Chalmers thinks that eventually there will be AIs with cognitive capacities akin to our own, even if only through brain emulation. So Chalmers thinks that a better strategy is to try to constrain the values of AI, and he thinks that this is more likely to be achieved via the brain enhancement route to AI, since in this case, the AI will still have the human biological core, initially at least, and so will be more likely to preserve human values. But if we instead achieve AI and AI Plus directly and not via brain enhancement, we need to try and build our human values, such as preserving human life, into the first AI machines. Hopefully then an AI that values human life will create an AI Plus that also values human life, and so on. However, this may be easier or harder depending on how AI is created. If the AI is created by direct programming, then perhaps it's likely that we can successfully program our values in. But if produced by simulated evolution or machine learning, it's far from clear that such values will be instilled. An interesting philosophical issue in the background here is the question of whether intelligence and value or morality can really come apart. The discussion has typically assumed that intelligence and value are separable, but perhaps intelligence and value are inextricably linked, such that an intelligent being will be fully morally upstanding too. How might we externally constrain AI? One option would be to ensure that AI, when created, does not inhabit the same physical environment as us. It might be prudent to create AI as part of a computer simulation so that it's unable to leak out and do us harm. However, even AI instantiated in a computer program will be capable of leaking out into our world if we so much as observe it. As the computer program-based AI progresses to AI Plus and AI Plus+, it will find ways of psychologically manipulating us to break free of the computer program so it may come to inhabit our world, if it so wished. It might, for example, convince us to embody it in a robot by saying that doing so would enable it to prevent all human disease, only to eradicate all human disease by killing all humans. The leak-proof world is an unattainable ideal. Nevertheless, it may be sensible to instantiate AI in a virtual world at first, at least, so as to slow down any potentially damaging leakage into our world. And this way we may be able to identify problems before they get out of hand, and so shut off the computer simulation if need be. But the problem now is that if the virtual world AI are conscious, shutting off their program may amount to an ethical disaster. What is our place within a world of AI Plus or AI Plus+ systems? So Chalmers suggests four options: extinction, isolation, inferiority, or integration. Extinction speaks for itself. Isolation amounts to our continued existence in such a way as to never interact with the AI Plus systems, perhaps because they inhabit their own virtual world, or we inhabit a virtual world. The third option is that we inhabit a common world, but as inferior beings to the AI Plus. Now, extinction is obviously undesirable. Chalmers also thinks that isolation is unattractive, and that living as inferiors will likely severely damage our quality of life. So Chalmers thinks that integration is the best option here, and on this option, we become super intelligent beings ourselves. The most likely way of achieving this in the long run, so that we keep up with the intelligence pace of AI, will be to ultimately dispense with our biological core by fully uploading ourselves to machines. We might start by enhancing our brains, but Chalmers thinks that the biological core will impose inherent limitations. So eventually, even if by a gradual process, we will need to replace our brains piece by piece over time with non-biological systems. This then amounts to uploading ourselves to a machine substrate. This raises two important questions. Will an uploaded version of you be conscious? And will it really be you? Okay, so we are now up against two of the most difficult problems in all of philosophy, the problem of consciousness and the problem of personal identity. A whole library could be written on these topics, so I'll go ahead and make this the briefest part of the podcast. Chalmers thinks that an upload would be conscious. There's no reason to think that slowly replacing the brain neuron by neuron with non-biological parts would at some point switch off the light of consciousness. So why think that a fully uploaded you would cease to be conscious? And Chalmers thinks that gradual uploading, i.e. replacing some very small portion of the brain at a time over an extended time period, is the safest method insofar as we are concerned with surviving the process, where survival here may be a different notion from personal identity, but it is nonetheless the notion that we should care most about. Chalmers says that if there is even a small chance that there will be a singularity, we should think hard about how to navigate it. I'm inclined to think that at least some more work should be done to estimate this chance. My hunch is that the chance is very low indeed. Now, we of course need to be cautious about low chance catastrophic events, but if the chance is sufficiently low, undue caution will then do more damage than good. Given how much effort and resources seem to go into the AI safety movement then, I think it might be worth pausing not so much the development of AI, but the rhetoric of risk to try and figure out just what chance there really is of the absolute worst outcome, as well as of the various less bad outcomes, so that we can then take a level-headed approach to appropriately putting resources into mitigating that risk. Now, maybe I'm unaware of significant work in this area. If so, please do let me know about it on Twitter or in an email. But I think my main concern with the philosophical argument for the singularity is with its reliance on the notion of intelligence. I'm very sympathetic to the kind of view that Chalmers outlines, according to which intelligence is not a real thing, and hence the argument for the singularity, premised as it is on the existence of intelligence, falls apart. It seems to me that the property of intelligence is ripe for elimination for the sorts of reasons that we would eliminate other higher level properties, i.e. when they are not indispensable or even useful to scientific reasoning, because we can in fact do better science with reference to more fundamental properties. So an example of this, there's no science of fragility, since the senses in which, for example, vases, spiderwebs, and ecosystems are fragile differ wildly, so we conduct our science in terms of the more specific relevant properties in each case. This constitutes a good reason to think that fragility is not really a thing, and I think similar considerations apply to intelligence. I'm also not convinced that Chalmers' shift to framing the argument in terms of a self-amplifying cognitive capacity that correlates with a second capacity that we care about helps much either. Another way of putting the worry about intelligence is just that it's a vague, woolly notion, and so just not well-defined enough to carry the weight of the argument for the singularity. I'm not sure the new notions that Chalmers introduces do any better in this respect. If you doubt that intelligence is a real thing, why would you think that there is such a thing as some specific reasoning ability? Nonetheless, it's hard to deny that the idea of the singularity prompts extremely interesting philosophical questions about ethics, intelligence, consciousness, and personal identity. And a unified framing of these otherwise potentially disparate topics is philosophically useful, and interesting at least. But this seems a long way off justifying some of the safety measures and summits being floated today, not to mention the potential for skepticism about AI safety concerns, given the huge incentives of exaggerating AI risks for AI safety consulting firms and for big tech companies seeking competition-squashing restrictive licenses on AI technology. That's not to say that there aren't more local, well-defined threats posed by AI that warrant quite serious attention and even practical defensive manoeuvres. I just don't think that the singularity is among these threats.
Thanks for listening to Condensed Matter. Please rate and review the show on your favourite app so that more people can find it. There's also a link to the show's Patreon page in the episode notes. Your support will help towards the costs associated with hosting and production and will lead to improvements in your future listening experience. Patrons of the show will also get the chance to suggest articles and guests for future episodes.